ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel with a slightly hoarse voice after an incredible week in Morocco and capped off in Gibraltar. And I'm live, actually, here. Well, live with the recording, but not live necessarily for you. In Jerusalem, Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, it's an honor to be back after 3 years of not being here. It is truly an honor to be here. And we have so much to cover in this Monday Motivation podcast. All right, I would like to thank everyone. There was generally an outpouring of support from last week's podcast about Rabbi Gross, our rabbi, blessed memory. Thank you all very much. Very touching comments. And I think we all rallying to support each other. So thank you very, very much for that. And now for Morocco. This is Morocco part one. There is so much. I said this about past trips. We could do many podcasts on this. I believe I'm planning to do 2 podcasts on Morocco, possibly 3. Let's see how this goes. Okay. It was really an incredible journey, life-changing. I'd like to give a shout-out to our donors, Project 613 supporters. This, what you're going to hear now, the impact it made on the lives, it's all you. It's all you. You make this happen. You absolutely make this incredible impact in the next generation and exploring our roots to build the future. And it's incredible, and I'm truly grateful. Okay, so people ask me, hey, Rabbi, how do you choose where to go for a trip? And it's actually a very good question. We have 2 criteria for a trip. One is it needs to be trending, meaning it's a place where people would like to go. People would like to go. And but it also, the second criteria is that it needs to have a very rich Jewish history. For example, some people said, Rabbi, why don't you go to Dubai? Well, you know, skyscrapers and Ferraris are great. I know it's trending, but it really, Dubai just does not have a great depth of Jewish history. So it's just, it's, even if people really, really, really want to go there, it's not happening. The other one that sort of pains me to say the reverse is that in terms of the other criteria right now, we'll see what happens going forward. But even before COVID, many of our young professionals going to Israel, which is replete with Jewish history and the best place for Jewish identity, just was not trending. I don't know if that's the outcome of the birthright phenomenon that I got it for free or I'll get it for free or whatever it is. But even before COVID, we backed away from our main trip being Israel trip as opposed to these other places, which are a little more enticing. All right, a larger discussion for another time. So Morocco has both. It is certainly is trending. People definitely want to go to Morocco. We put in a ton of work in recruiting, but it was the demand for the trip was very, very high, which was incredible. And the Jewish history there is incredible. Now, let's do a little bit of background of Moroccan Jewish history. What's going on? When did Jews get, when did our brothers and sisters get to Morocco? So possibly even as early as after the destruction of the first temple, there were Jews all the way dispersed to northwestern Africa, which puts it about 2,500 years ago-ish, 2,500 years ago. But everyone agrees that at least by after the destruction of the second temple, 2,000 years ago, there was a community in Morocco, a Jewish community in Morocco. Now, the Jews at that time lived, most of them, in the Atlas Mountains. Really, Morocco is actually really beautiful. The Atlas Mountains, which we visited near the city of modern-day Marrakesh. And they lived, and this is where there's a little bit of a historical debate. They lived with the Berbers. They're called the Berber Jews. So now, the Berbers were given that name. Berber sounds like barbarian, And they that's actually where they came from. This was a very rugged and tough mountain people. And there are different versions of it. The versions of it that the Jews lived there, and the Berbers, actually non-Jews, converted because they liked what they saw in the Jews, and they converted. Others say that, no, there was no mass Berber conversion to Judaism, but rather the Jews living around the Berbers became influenced and became these tough mountain Jews. So either way, I'm not one to decide which one it was. But so a large number of Jews lived in with the Berbers or the Berber Jews in the Atlas Mountains. And one very fascinating thing, we actually came to visit on our second day, and a Berber village. It was absolutely incredible. We actually were on the roof of a 2,000-year-old Berber Jewish home. Very sparse, very rugged, but absolutely beautiful view, the mountains. It was incredible. And our amazing tour guide, and I'll give him a shout out, Rabbi Rafi Garson of J Roots. He's from England. He really brings everything alive. He's an absolutely incredible person, incredible tour guide, and a wonderful rabbi as well. And he made a beautiful comment. He said, Berbers were known to live very sparsely. And the question is why? You know, what's on your wall? What's on our wall? Fancy portraits, fancy decorations. The Berber hut, not only now, but classically, was very sparse. And the question is why? And the answer is, if you are only passing through, if you're only a visitor, then you don't need to do up your hotel room. You don't need to do up your place where you're staying just for a night because you're moving on. The Berber Jews lived with the idea of Tzipisa the Yeshua. Did you anticipate the final redemption when we're all going to go back to Israel, when the Messiah comes? And this is already 2,000 years ago. And they didn't do up their homes because they were waiting and anticipating the great future when they would return to Israel. That's an amazing thing. You think about us living in our homes and how much time and energy we put in, because many of us feel that our home, wherever we are right now, is our final stop. That's it. But really, one of the six questions, believe it or not, we're going to be asked, our final exam going up to heaven, when we get to Shemayim, God will ask us one of those six questions. The Talmud records this. Is Tzipis the Yeshua? Did you anticipate the final salvation, i.e. Messiah coming and taking us from our homes? And it's hard because we definitely feel rooted wherever we live. But that was the life, that was the feeling that the Berber Jews lived with, is that this is not our final stop. And even though they lived there for a couple thousand years, they were always waiting for the final completion of humanity and of the world with the coming of the Messiah. I thought it was a very inspiring and powerful idea. So that was the initial start of the Jewish community in Morocco. But the real huge influx of Jews to Morocco was with the rise of Islam. Islam from 622 to 632, the founding years of Islam, and then as early as 711. No, it's not the Slurpee year. Well, it is the Slurpee year. It's not Slurpees, but the year. 711, the Muslims conquered Morocco. Can you imagine how quickly Islam spread? Just FYI. And the Jews followed the Muslims, who in general were much better throughout history to us up until the last 100 and 150 years than the Christians were. And we followed the Muslims from into North Africa, into Spain, and the Jewish community grew. Now, when right after the Berber village, we went off to further up into the Atlas Mountains. It's beautiful, had this river flowing through the valley. It was really quite spectacular, to be honest. We visited the grave of Rabbi Shlomo ben Lachenz. Now, I'm sure I butchered that. The Shlomo part, I got that. And it means the rabbi of the snakes. So what does that mean? Now, here's the story. The story is that the great ruler threw the rabbi into a pit of snakes for whatever crime of being Jewish, and the rabbi survived the snakes. The snakes did not touch him. And so therefore, because of this, his quote-unquote, what was perceived as magical powers, he was named the Snake Rabbi. Now, why is this significant? It's significant because for a few things. First of all, we see the holiness of and the reverence that Moroccan Jews give to their rabbis. Some of the greatest rabbis of the last 500 years have come from Morocco. Morocco is deeply, deeply steeped in Kabbalah and mystical wisdom. And once you are at that high spiritual level, there's this concept of being in control of nature, that the animal kingdom will actually recognize the spiritual Tzelem Elohim, godly image in which we are made, and not impact you. It's a very powerful idea. Now, we had actually a pretty emotional experience there at the grave of this tzaddik, of this righteous person, and we introduced the concept. What does it mean? You know, where do Jews go to travel? So it's like, oh, let's go to different graves. And it's actually very funny if you contrast how different people do their vacationing. There are Jewish tours around the world, literally going to graves of great rabbis and great women. Why? Okay, because we believe, first of all, we do not pray to these people. We pray only to God. But in the merit in which these people lived, they blazed a spiritual pathway of connection to God. We want to piggyback on their spiritual merit and come closer to God. But we are in no way deifying the dead. And it became a very powerful, we lit a candle in honor of the neshama, the soul of the tzaddik, and that was that in the Berber village. Okay, we came back, did camels, of course, your perfunctory camel ride. This is actually really tremendous, a lot of fun, just beautiful time of sunset, and it was quite special. The next morning, we had different options. We had a hot air balloon ride, which was absolutely incredible. You can see our pictures hopefully online in various places. And then we had visited a spice, the others visited a spice factory. Okay, so Marrakesh, that was in Marrakesh. We went headed off to Casablanca. Casablanca is very much a modern city, and we visited the Talmud Torah there, the school and the network of schools led by Rabbi Sebag. Rabbi Sebag, he was amazing. Actually, many people in our group said that was really one of the highlights of it. He was not like a rah-rah speaker. He was rock solid. He was just, there's a certain concept of meeting someone who is just a solid person. And he spoke about Torah education. And he said, the real key, there is no secret that the Moroccan Jewish community in the last 100 years was deeply influenced by only secular education. And the only way to continue as Jews is with a Torah Jewish identity, the Torah Jewish education. And I don't know how controversial that is for people. I don't know how controversial that is for people listening. We have people listening to this podcast from all parts of the Jewish world. But it's really simple. It's very simple, folks. If Jews learn Torah, they will survive. And if not, they won't. They just won't. It's insanity that leaders of certain parts of the Jewish community keep banging their heads against the wall. Let's throw another few hundred million at this idea or that idea or this cultural thing. I'm sorry, folks. I hate to break the news to you. If we are knowledgeable in Torah, we will continue as Jews. And if not, not. And this Talmud Torah, this traditional Jewish school is proof in the pudding, with all of the Jewish children going off to live vibrant lives. Now, this brings up an issue. Which Jews are left? Which Jews are left in Morocco? The answer is not many. Anywhere from about maybe 1,000 to 2,000 Jews. There were a lot of French Moroccans who live in France now, and Israelis who were visiting. It's a thriving tourist business. But in terms of living there, it's actually very few. But those who are left have the option for this very amazing Jewish education. Okay, moving on. We went to, in Casablanca the next morning, to absolutely incredible mosque. Now, people ask, hey, Rabbi, how can you go inside of a mosque? Okay, it's a longer discussion. But this mosque, Islam believes in God in a pure form. The challenge with Christianity is they believe in the Trinity. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit is a big issue theologically, Jewishly. How big of an issue? Enough so that it is not permissible to go into a church. I'm sorry to break your hearts, everyone, but you can look at the pictures of Notre Dame online. Google Images, no problem. You just can't go in there. However, a mosque, they believe 100% in God, and they do not trifurcate that deity, and therefore it is permissible to go into a mosque. It was absolutely stunning. This entire mosque complex could fit 180,000 people. It was truly just a stunning thing. Okay, now what I would like to talk about is, on this note, is the next stop, which we went, which was the mausoleum of King Mohammed V. King Mohammed V was ruling Morocco in the time of World War II. And Hitler wanted not only Ashkenazi Jews. He did not discriminate between Ashkenazi and Sephardi Jews. All Jews were the same, whatever color skin, whatever straight or curly hair, whatever color eyes there were. Hitler had one image, one vision of what he wanted. And he wanted every Jew dead. And so he requested of King Mohammed V for all of the 250,000 Jews from Morocco to be shipped and transported into Nazi control. Now, if you go to Auschwitz, okay, the Auschwitz part of Auschwitz-Birkenau, you will see that's where the actual museum is in Auschwitz. You'll see there's, right when you go in, there's a map of all of Europe, as far as Norway in the top and even down to Morocco and other places. They had how all of the rail lines were going to end up at Auschwitz. It's a very powerful map. They had their eye on every single Jew in that area. And then after that, they really had their eye on every single Jew in the world. Okay. And King Mohammed V stood up to Hitler and pushed him off. And he said that there are only Moroccans. There are no Jewish Moroccans. There are no Muslim Moroccans. We're all Moroccans. And he was, and he pushed him off. He refused. He refused, even though the Vichy government of France, which is a pro-Nazi government, was ruling Morocco at the time and very strong there. He refused to hand over his Jews. Now, it's just amazing. It is amazing that he was able to do this, that he was able to withstand the pressure, and he is a man who has the credit of saving 250,000 Jews. Now, it's a little complicated, his future afterwards and how he ruled and his relationship with the Jews and Israel and Zionism was definitely a little bit more colored. And so therefore, Rabbi Garcon said that was probably the reason why he hasn't gotten, quote unquote, the credit that he deserves. But now it's time to give him credit for what he did during World War II. It's absolutely incredible. And the question is, why? Why did he do this? It says in when Avraham, in chapter 12 of Bereishis, of Genesis, it says, Lecha, go from your land. And it says that those nations who will bless you will be blessed, and those who curse you will be cursed. And this King Mohammed knew that lesson. He knew the lesson of the blessing of the Jews. if he was going to receive a blessing, he needed to treat the Jews nicely. God willing, his example will shine through for all non-Jewish leaders throughout the world. Okay, folks, we are at the end here of the first part. There's so much more to share, but it was so powerful to be part of a vibrant Jewish past and made strength of the Jewish Moroccan community. Give us inspiration to live this inspired Jewish life today. God bless. See you next week, right back here for another exciting edition of Mother Nature.